Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 8, delivered on September 17, 2012. The title of this lecture is Analysis of Financial Statements.
Today, the analysis of financial statements. This will be a two-lecture sequence. The first part of it is I'm just going to tell you about financial statements, expose you to a set of financial statements, and talk about some of the tools that we use in analyzing companies based upon their public filings with respect to income statements and balance sheets. Then on Wednesday, I'm going to give you all, each of you, a sheet, and we'll go through a company together, and you'll have little slots where you'll put down the different calculations for ratios, profitability, liquidity, and all that kind, just to make sure that you are on track, because on your first exam, which will be coming up, the calendar will be up tonight, on your first exam in a couple of weeks, I'm going to just give you a set of financial statements and ask you to give me a couple of ratios off it, and that... This makes sure that you can do that. It's not hard to do. What is a more important to us than just getting the ratios is seeing what the ratios tell us, what they mean, how you interpret financial statements in terms of what they're disclosing straight up and what they're disclosing in terms of some of the calculations that we could make. Now, in order to do what I'm going to do today, I want to bring up some financial statements. I think I'm going to just pull up some Yahoo statements here. I always worried about a corporation that had the name Yahoo to begin with. And the reason that sucked was, okay, let's try that again. Oh, there we go. Yahoo. Now, when you go to financial statements, one thing you'll always want to make sure is what are the units, the scale of this that's being disclosed. That obviously, well, that's the balance sheet. Let me take you over to the income statement to start this ball rolling here. Income statement would be right here. Okay, now, all numbers in thousands. So in other words, any number that you see there, you're going to want to put 000 in front of it just to get the idea of the scale. So in other words, a company like Yahoo, its total revenue constituted what? About how much money? $5 billion? Now, I don't know what kind of family you came from, but that's what we call serious money. Or, you know, on the street, that's some serious shit. That's a lot of money. The funny thing is that almost all of you will work in a world where the companies have this scale of almost incomprehensible money flowing in, flowing out, hopefully more flowing in than flowing out. But in the world of business, you have these 800-pound gorillas that are essentially the businesses that we always think about, that you read about in the newspaper, with which you seem to interact so frequently. Always keep in mind, though, that there is a massive substrate of tiny companies. Companies that have revenues from $50 million on down to a company like mine that has a couple of tens of thousands of dollars. And so don't ever get the idea that the whole world is made up of these kinds of monsters like this. Yes, they do dominate the landscape, but there is a whole lot out there, including jobs that exist in small companies that don't come even close to this scale. But for 2011, you will see the that these companies, this company generated almost $5 billion in net revenue, in total revenue, Now, one thing that I probably should back down here, something looks interesting here. Well, let me ask you this. What do you notice about this company's revenues? Is there anything that's striking you about it? It's just its revenues? Go ahead. Interesting. We go down here. The company has essentially contracted severely. As far, I mean, that's like maybe a quarter, a third, but profitability rose from $772 million up to $800 million. So clearly, there was something that happened with respect to their how would I want to put it? Their cost structure that saved the day. Let me do something here. I want to pull up another company here real quick. Bear with me. I'm going to look at something here. I want to show you something. And I'll have to do this with a company other than Yahoo. Okay, this is better. Okay. Yeah, Google. The first mathematical thing I want to show you, and by the way, on an exam, you're allowed a note card for formulas. For God's sake, take advantage of it. Memorizing the formulas, realistically, if you do this in the real world, you'll remember the formulas after a while. Sometimes you'll see me try to pull one up and I'll screw it up a little bit. But honestly, even among the analysts that I've worked with over the years, we all have our ratios, books, our ratio crib cards with us at all times. There's nothing wrong with having a formula sheet with the ratios on it. But before I show you ratios, there's something that I want to show you that is critically important that is oftentimes not discussed when we're talking about analysis of financial statements. It's a simple little formula that has to do with change. Now, the word change in mathematics, and especially in finance and economics, is represented by the symbol delta. Delta means change. So if I were to look at this change that we're talking about with respect to Google, 29,321 goes up to 37,905. And I do suck at arithmetic, so if I make a mistake, please say something to me. We could say that the revenues of this company changed by what? $8,584,000. Is that right? $8 billion, my ass. Really? Yeah, you're right. Geez, that company's really hurting. What's funny is 2 months ago, Google was being petulant with the Federal Trade Commission. So not disclosing some information. So the Justice Department decided to teach Google a lesson. The DOJ slapped a fine on Google of $25,000. I kid you not. You know, I could just see Google, ow, ow, ow. That didn't hurt. Okay. Here's the thing, though. That really isn't very useful to us. Yeah, it went up by $8 billion. What does that mean? Not a lot compared to something else. That is the absolute delta on 2010 to 2011. But what's more important is something called percent delta, the percentage change. You do it like this. You take the last value minus the beginning value divided by the beginning value. And then you times it by 100 to make it a percentage. Now, hear me well. Whenever you give me a decimal, whenever you give me anything that involves decimal places, give me two decimal places, always. If it's a percent, if it's a pure number, whatever. Always two decimal places. Don't impress me that your calculator can do 25,000 decimal places. Don't. And don't round it to the nearest number. Always. If it comes out to be 1.5, you give me 1.50. If it comes out to be 3.2618, you give me 3.26. Always two decimal places. Don't violate this rule. Every place you work will have a house rule about decimal places. This was a house rule that I learned long ago. It's still very popular. Giving too many decimal places just you lose the significance of what you're saying. Give too few decimal places, and you are probably misstating something that might be interesting as well. Two is the happy place to be on any of this. So now, with respect to that percentage change in sales, percent delta, oops, I'm sorry, revenue, they use the word revenue. Revenue, I will do the ending value less the beginning value, and then you work that out, or put in parentheses, and then you say divided by the beginning value. And then you times it by 100%. That is a much more meaningful number. And I'll tell you why in a second, as soon as I work that out for myself. And I actually did these, but for a different company than the one I'm calling now. You know what? I can't see anything anymore. They're making print so small these days. Okay. Just to make sure that I can, you get the same thing I do. 37,905 less 29,321, and I do that in parentheses. You can just say equals if you want. Divided by 29,321, and the result of that is 29.28%. Here's why that's important. You see, this way I can compare this company's revenue growth to another company's revenue growth. Because companies at different scales will have different absolute deltas. If I get them all into percentages, then I can compare a giant like Google to a smaller company, like, for example, Yahoo, or to an even smaller company that's an upstart company. With the percentages, I'm in the same language for all of the different companies. And then I can compare that growth rate of the revenue, that percent growth rate of the revenue, to the percent growth rate of net income. So in other words, now, with that in mind, I can work out, let me look at the net income here on this little boy. And I'm going to just do, and I would encourage you to do it with me, to make sure that you can see what the net income change was. In this case, 9737 less 8505, all divided by 8505, and I get 14.49%. So now I can say percent delta net income was 14.49%. Okay, now I can begin to compare different numbers down the financial statements. I can say, all right, revenues grew by 29.28% against net income growing about 14.5%. That's telling, because I now know that this company's revenue base grew by about twice as much as its net income base grew. So what looks like dramatically really cool stuff, wow, look at this company grow, I now have a little bit of a darker picture. Now, it doesn't mean Google's on its way to hell, but it certainly, well, it probably is, but I now see something that's telling me that, yeah, this company's revenue base is growing at a staggering rate. Almost, it grew by almost a third from year over year, but its net income did not keep pace, which would tell me that they are laying in. This is a preliminary, and I'd have to look deeper, and you will be able to do that too. But the first thing that I would guess is, okay, they are clearly generating that revenue by spending a lot of money. Somewhere between that revenue, which is growing at an incredible rate, and that net income, a whole bunch of money is going away. And that's probably fueling that hard growth in the revenue base. You decide that you don't have enough money for dinner, so you're going to burn down your house. Now, I look on the outside, you know, dude, the hell, look at that house, that's cool. You know, you did that with matches? No, you went to the gasoline station, you led a pump line into the house, and you turned on the spigot. Yeah, now I see why you got such a bright flame. Can I get some marshmallows? I don't know what the hell that had to do with what I'm talking about. You know, shut the hell up. But you understand that it's not any single number, and it's not even any single percentage or ratio that tells me the story of a company. You have to look at a composite picture. Here I see a company growing rapidly on its revenue base, but I don't see it growing so rapidly on its income base. Let me take you to another company. And this, by the way, you're learning old school. I can teach you just ratio analysis, ratios, calculate this, calculate that. But what I want you to do, and you'll be expected to do this when we get to the exam, is to start to think about what it is you're seeing. Not just what you're seeing, but why you're seeing it. Let me go and find another company. Let's try this one. Let me get rid of some of these tabs here. Oh, well, that was brilliant. Good Lord. Yeah, I can internet. It's like they say, hire the old guys. They're fun to watch. Yes, that's what I'm. Is that what I meant? You know what? What the heck? Let me do something here. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to pull up something here and show you, go a little deeper. First, let's open the income statement and the balance sheet and have a look at these two pretties. You do see why I'm laughing right here, right? See that number? $486 billion. Is that what that is? I mean, damn, you know? I was proud when I broke $24,000 a year income. Okay, real quick, and I'm just going to do this right here. I'm going to look at the change in net income year over year. And I would do, to do a change in net income year over year on ExxonMobil, I would do 4.8, I do it in parentheses, 4.86, 4.92, 4.29, I was just testing you there, less 3.83, 221, all divided by, close the parentheses, all divided by 383221. Growth of revenue, what do you get? Yeah, 26.93%. Percent delta revenue, 26.93%. Okay, percent delta, sorry. Percent delta revenue. Now let's go down, look at the net income. Oh, now that's interesting. We'll do 41,060 less 30,460, close the parentheses, divided by 30,460. Percent change in net income. Is 34.80%. Well, here's one where you got the opposite happened as per Google. There's actually a pretty good explanation for why one company's revenue would grow faster than its net income, Google, while another company like ExxonMobil, its revenue would not grow as fast as its net income year over year. Now, let's see if we can really hurt your feelings a little bit. Madam, why would that be? Why would Google's revenue grow at a faster percentage rate than its net income, but ExxonMobil's revenue would grow at a but ExxonMobil's net income would grow at a faster percentage than its revenue? Do you have an idea of it? So why would that be? Why would Google be facing a more aggressively rising expense structure than ExxonMobil? Any guess? Anyone want to take a stab? Work it.
Style of business.
Go. Keep going.
You got an oil company probably has the wages already set there.
And not just the wages. Okay, you're on the right track. Don't say wages, though. There's more to it than wages. The entire infrastructure of ExxonMobil, the whole thing, you're absolutely right. Go ahead.
And then the style of business with Google and computers, the new software they have to buy, they're always constantly trying to stay on top, stay ahead of the new technology line, which are pretty more expensive than that.
That's good. You got most of the answer there. A little more flesh to it is that with Google, it is still a young company. So you will still see it laying in capital structure, new capital structure, as a very significant component of its asset, total overall assets. In other words, when you are young, you are putting in a lot of body into your growth, okay? A lot of new stuff is being put in, and also innovation, as you said. You're building the business. So you're going to see a lot of capital investment going in as a percentage of the company's overall asset structure. With ExxonMobil, that animal is already the whole planet. It puts in a new oil field. That is a tiny part of its overall asset base. Anything that ExxonMobil would do, or any kind of a hydrocarbons-based old company would do, it would be a very small piece of the company's overall structure. Okay, when you were young, now obviously you are a very slender, strapping, upstanding young stud, as it is, but let's talk about you when you were growing up. There was a lot more weight being put into you per pound of weight that was already there when you were a kid. You eat 10 cheeseburgers when you're a kid, you grow 2 feet. Believe me, I had a teenage son. Every time we opened the refrigerator, he grew a foot. And I became poor. But now, you eat 10 cheeseburgers, what is it going to do? It's going to add very little to you. Just make you more to love. A little bit more. Something like that. Saw a cartoon, the old guy and old woman. Old woman said, "Do I look fat?" And the old guy said, "Do I look stupid?" So there you have a stalemate. Okay, but the point there being that with Google, it puts in capital investment. It's going to be a significant expense compared to what's already there. With ExxonMobil, it could do a massive project. Hell, it could start mining on the moon, and it probably wouldn't do much to change its expense structure and its capital base. That's why you'll see a company like this, when its revenues grow, a lot of that just goes right down to the net income line. But with Google, when its revenues grow, it had to work a lot harder for that. In your early years as a business person, you're going to work your asses off. And you're going to notice these 40, 50, 60-year-old man, upper-level managers, they're just going to sit back on their fat asses. That's the same principle going on here. A lot more of your revenue you're going to have to work for. When you get older, you'll just be able to sit back and float. So there you go. Now I'm going to do something else here. I'm going to introduce you, show you an interesting ratio. Let's do a couple, just to throw out the game and see why we care about these ratios and what they mean in practical terms. Let me talk about a couple of just something, what we would call a prop. I got to watch it. Let me look at something real quick here. Yeah, profitability ratio. Profitability ratios. Now, profitability ratios, there are actually five. There are more than that. I'm going to get down to one of the interesting ones real quick here, but I would caution you that what the book shows you, the ratios, that is a very limited set of ratios, and I will stick to that set in this class, except for a couple I'll show you that are old school that we use, and still to this day I teach hardcore technical analysts. I'll show you a couple of the ones that aren't in the book. But for the most part, all I'll show you are the core ratios that they do in these intro textbooks. One of them that is just is fun to start with is just to mention, okay, margins, specifically net margin. Net margin is one that kind of has a story behind it. Let me show you net margin. Net margin is simply your net income divided by your revenues or your sales. If you see me accidentally write sales and don't correct myself, that means revenue. We used to call it sales. Now it's revenue. That sounds more respectable, I guess. Okay, let's look at the net margin for ExxonMobil 2011. That would be, where the hell am I? That would be your, and I always do these right on the fly so you can see me doing it. I'm going to do 41060 divided by 48640 486 429. So 41060, and I encourage you again to go with me. 060 divided by 486429. And I get an 8.44%. Okay, now, and you got that. If you had a calculator, you got that. Okay, now, the next question, and I'll help you with this. Woman, is that good or bad? Okay, I'll tell you what to say. Why the hell are you asking me that, teacher? I don't know. You see, because you don't. You see, here's the thing is, from one industry to another, definitely, you can have industries with net margins 25, 30, 50%. Then you can have industries with net margins below 1%. So you really can't know until you have seen it in the context of the industry's average ratios. That's really all I can't say, is this good or bad, until I know more about what is would be typical in this industry. Is that a lot or a little compared to overall? Or what is would we consider the best company, and what's its net margin? Net margin on its own, just simply saying, here's a net margin. I can't say much about that. Now, here's the next thing I'm going to do. I'm going to do the net margin for 2010 as well. And if I do the margin for net margin for 2010, that would be 3460 divided by 383221, and I get 7.95%. So the net margin has grown. That's a good sign, obviously, right there. But again, here's the thing. The absolute growth was what? 49 basis points. But what I'd really like to know is what the percent change in net margin is. How much as a percentage did it grow? And that would be 8.44% less 7.95% divided by 7.95% times 100%. In other words, I'm interested in growth rates and decay rates of everything, absolute numbers and even ratios. That tells me a lot more than raw numbers do every time. So in this case, I can say 8.44% minus 7.9, and all I have to do, I don't even need to put in percentages or anything like that because they'll cancel out anyway, divided by 7.95%. So net margin grew by 6.16%. Year over year, the net margin grew by a little more than 6%. Now, that would be actually kind of beyond what most people would think. You see, most people think that, well, if we already got a percentage, why are you doing a percentage of a percentage? I'm doing that because I want to know percent growth. In this case, I went from 7.95% to 8.44%. That's not, well, yeah, it grew, but that's not nearly as useful as saying their net margin grew a little better than 6%. I don't see any 6% in that 8.44 or 7.95. That's right. But it's meaningful because now I know that the growth rate of net margin, and I can compare that to the growth rate of net margin of competitors. So I might be able to say, okay, one of their competitors had a net margin last year of 9.3%. So they must be better than ExxonMobil? Not necessarily. Let's look at how the growth of their net margins is behaving, comparing them. Then I can say, this one's better, this one's worse. I've got a much better basis for comparison than if I just look at plain old numbers. Now, I'll go back through this again on Wednesday because it gets into a kind of a conceptually tangled place thinking about percentages of percentages. but it's really important to start thinking away from absolute numbers and isolated numbers like this 8.44% and think about those numbers in terms of percentage growth or percentage drop-off. By the way, there are a couple of others in the profitability. That was net margin. A couple of others are gross margin. And gross margin is simply your gross profit over your sales. Gross profit, you take out your cost of goods sold. So with respect to ExxonMobil, I can say the gross profit 2011 would be 179,627. And I'm writing this down so you can go back and look at it yourself later if you want to look at ExxonMobil. Over 486,429. I mean, minus 486. Oh, over, it is over. Ditch. Over 486,429. Cranking that one out, 179,627 divided by 486,429. That's a gross margin of 36.93%. Basically, what that number is telling you, remember the cost of goods sold is expense that can be directly, pinpointedly tied to a dollar of sale. What part of that dollar was direct that you earned directly got used up creating that dollar? And so in this case, what I am essentially saying here is that about almost 37 cents of every dollar the company generated survived the direct process of making that dollar happen. Again, every dollar that company generated in revenue, for every dollar that company generated in revenue, about 37 cents of it survived the cost of directly making that dollar happen. It's useful. And again, you can't tell anything. Is this a good number? Is this a bad number? I mean, hell, think about a service industry. A service industry has no cost of goods sold, and therefore, its gross profit, its gross margin would be nearly 100%. In other words, there would be the cost of goods sold is virtually zero. But in a manufacturing industry, you could have some companies where to make a dollar, it costs a lot of money directly to create that dollar. You could have a gross profit that was a gross margin that was 18-25%. In this case, you will notice that ExxonMobil spends about 63 cents to make a dollar. That would be not surprising because considering that it is obscenely expensive to extract hydrocarbons and to move those hydrocarbons and to turn those hydrocarbons into fuels that the world can use. That is an obscenely expensive direct cost. So quite personally, it's surprising that 63 cents of the dollar, that more than 63 cents is not spent in this process. But there you are. A company that doesn't spend a lot directly to create a dollar would obviously have a bigger number there. We can't say much about this until we look at the industry, what's typical of the industry, or also I might want to look at the percent growth or decline in the gross margin from 2010 to 2011. That's real technical analysis. It's not, doesn't end just with the ratios. It ends with thinking about what those ratios tell us and also looking beyond the basic ratios and looking at the changes, percent changes in the ratios. Let me give you another one, and this is my way of sneaking in the terminology also. Another one that might be worth, these are profitability ratios. These are profitability ratios. Another profitability ratio would be operating margin. Operating margin, which is operating profit, over sales. Operating profit over sales. Yes, revenue. Okay, fine. I come from the time when we did PowerPoints on stone tablets, and I dragged your ass up to hold up the stone tablets, okay? Back in my time, we didn't have integers. We had zeros and ones, binary, and we lived with it. Sometimes we were too poor to have the ones, but we made do with the zeros. You can do a lot with zeros. Sorry, I lost my cool there for a second. Operating margin. Now, by the way, on financial statements, and I'm going to give you this warning before we step, you step in and start doing financial statements on your own, which you will do in the next couple of classes. The terminology is different for different financial statements. Old school, you would say P&L, profit and loss. Now we say income statement. Old school, sales. Now we say revenue. Old school, and still used in academia, is the term EBIT for operating profit. Don't be fooled if you see EBIT on an income statement instead of operating profit. They're the same thing, unless there's some note that says they're different. So you'll see me use the term EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, but it's the same thing that, as operating profit. And in this one, the operating profit essentially takes into account not just the cost of goods sold, the direct expenses, but also the diffuse expenses, the costs of the workers, the costs of the managers, the costs of mailings and advertising, meals and entertainment and utilities and all that. It takes in the cost that can't be pinpointed to $1 exactly that you earn. So now we get to the operating, and we got 73,504, 73,504 over 486,429. And if I do that one, survey says 73,504 divided by 486,429, and you get 15.11%. Here was gross margin, 36.93%. Over there is net margin. What was that, about 14, 15? Okay. So in other words, having made it past the direct costs of earning a dollar, we burn up more than half of what's left on the soft expenses in the company. Again, you see how I had 37 cents left after I'd paid the direct cost of making a dollar. By the time I've paid all of the people, paid for the utilities, paid the depreciation expense, as if I really did that, paid all of those soft costs, I've wiped out well more than half of that 37 cents I had left. I'm trying to kind of give you an acculturation as to how old school we think about these things. We think about them in dollars and cents. I mean, I can't imagine 486 billion friggin' dollars. But I can sure imagine a dollar. I earned a dollar. It cost me about 63 cents to earn that dollar. Yeah, okay. Okay, so I've got 37 cents left. And then I pay everyone. I do all of the other things to keep the lights on and keep the people happy and all of that. And at the end of all of that, I've got less than half of that left. It's the nature of the business. Is that good or bad? I'd have to see if what the normal is in this industry and what the changes in this are from year to year. It's all about context. It's all relative in this, in what we're doing here. Okay, that's the net margin. And okay, and as I said, EBIT is what we, oh, I'm sorry, that's operating margin. And as I said, EBIT is the way we describe that. Now I'm going to give you a couple of last of these profitability ratios just for you to think about. And these are, again, this is just profitability ratios. Return on assets. This one's called ROA. These are two of the biggies. There's ROA and ROE. And you use these terms and people will think that you are really, really cool. Yeah, the ROA of that was, or the ROE. Yeah, trust me, your boss at the party, when you go home for Thanksgiving, talk about ROA and ROE, and you will have mom and dad write you an extra check for the next semester. Or not. ROA, net over assets. Let me fill. Net income, I'm doing it talking in the real fast way we do. Sorry about that. You'll get used to just saying net over assets. ROA is your net income divided by your total assets. Now I'm going to calculate the number. One of these will be from the income statement. The other one's from the balance sheet. I'm going to calculate it here, and then I'm going to, for 2011, then I'm going to tell you what this is talking about. Going over to the balance sheet, well, net was what? 41060, and then I'm going to divide that. I'm going to flip over to the balance sheet and look for the total assets. Total assets, 331050. I get a 12.40% return on assets. Your assets are the investment of the company. Your assets are what essentially what you have put in terms of money into your portfolio as a company. The net income is what came out of that investment for the year. So in this case, I am by this number, this ROA number, saying that this company earned a 12.40% return on the total value of everything it threw at the universe. Is that a good number or a bad number? There's one more thing you have to answer with respect to that. First of all, you have to look at the industry standard. But more importantly, you ask about the risk. 12.40% means nothing until I know what the risk was of it. If I am, I promise you, I'm going to give you a dollar if you jump off the top of this building. You're not going to do it because the risk is too high, even though there was a return of a buck. You're not going to do it because the risk was too high. That's the way it works in the world of corporate and in the world of investments. Essentially, 12.40%, that could be great if this is a low-risk company. That could suck if this is a high-risk company. So the question would be, is this a low-risk company or is this a high-risk company? What say you about this company? Low, obviously. It's not going to blow up. It's not going to go, it's not going to disappear into a black hole. And it was so funny a couple of years ago when they had that blowout in the Gulf, the Horizon deep well blew. BP could actually go bankrupt. You ignorant imbecile. No. You dumbass. For God's sake, get a job at Fox News. No, it's not going to go. These companies are like gods. They live forever. They will live past the time of hydrocarbons. They will be there for the next round, the wind turbines, the fusion reactors, the microwave reflectors in space, you name it, they'll be there. This is a safe company, relatively speaking. 12.40% return on their investment, all of their assets all together, produced a return for 2011 of 12.40%. That's pretty darned nice. Now, we're going to go back and look at Google with respect to these in a minute. But what I want to do is the other one is ROE. ROE, this is the return on equity. Which is net over shareholders' equity. This tells us how much the shareholders' money earned. The part of the total assets, remember total assets are liabilities plus owners' equity. The money that belongs to the shareholders, how well did that do last year? We should hope that it would have done better because it's got the it's riskier than the overall portfolio, which includes debt, which is less risky. But let's crank it out and see what happens. ROE. Now we're going to need the net again. And if I could remember things, 41060 divided by. And as I pointed out before, we're going to do this again on Wednesday, more structured than I'm doing it now. But we're just going to do this until you're familiar with it. I'm not just throwing this at you and saying, learn it right here today. Your stockholders' equity, see, there it is right there. You sometimes have to prowl around and to find it. And sometimes, like I said, the name isn't exactly what you're expecting, but it's pretty clear here. And then I'm going to divide that by 154,396. And I get an ROE of 26.59%. In other words, the money in that company's book that belongs to the shareholders, this company got them a 26.5% return for the year, about. Not bad. Now, again, you can't say absolutely. You have to look at the industry average and risk of the company and the stock, the riskiness of the stock. But still, that doesn't suck. Not at all. Now, I just want to go back very briefly, and I want to look at Google one more time. Was it Google I was looking at? Yeah. And see what their ROA and their ROE are. Okay? So, You know, that sucked. Let's try that again. Okay, let's look at ROA for Google. ROA would be net 9737. 9737 divided by its total assets. I'm doing ROA here. 72574. That's a 13.42%. Is that what you get for the ROA? 13.42%. So Google, this was Exxon. Okay, so now let's look at Exxon against Google on ROE. And to do ROE on Google, I would want to do the net income, 9737, divided by the equity, 58145. Wait a minute, what do you get? I gotta pay more attention. 16.75%. 16 point what? Okay. What do you notice on ROA and ROE? Which one has a higher return on our return on assets? Obviously, Google. Which one has a higher return on equity? Which one? What? You have to forgive me. I always love to do these without prepping so that I can have my ass shocked by what I see sometimes. Have a look there. Which one of these is doing better by the shareholder's book? Is that what you would expect? I mean, Google is a higher risk company. Investing in the company entails investing in something that is a riskier animal. And yet, Google is providing a lower return on the money it kept that belongs to the shareholders than ExxonMobil did. You see, total shareholders' equity is the money, is sort of like a representation of the money that the company kept to reinvest of the shareholders. It belongs to the shareholders, that money does. It's just the company kept it to reinvest it instead of giving it out in dividends. And yet, the company that would clearly, in my mind, be a riskier thing for the owners, the equity, the shareholders, isn't producing as much of a return as some old dinosaur, fossil fuels, literally extracting oil from giant dinosaurs company. That's one of those that is sort of like a little bit of a blinking red light that I wasn't expecting to be able to show you here. Usually everything is kind of like, well, yeah, we got the younger company, more aggressive growth, it'll have a higher return on equity because the investors will expect that. Well, this is a small warning sign. It's not a sell signal. But I, as an investment analyst, would say, now, wait a minute. I need to have a much, much more careful look at Google because suddenly I've seen something that bothers me a lot. You're out to dinner with a bunch of your friends. Everything is happy. You're having a good time together. You're talking about sports, girls, college, your careers. And then just for a split second, this guy that's sitting next to you, an alien comes out of his chest and then goes back in. Now, you'll go on with the conversation. You know, it's a good night. You don't want to ruin things. But are you going to invite him to a movie with you? Because in the dark, that might come back out and it might be really, really bad. Turns out that alien wasn't an alien at all. It was Justin Bieber coming out to sing a song. I don't know what the hell this whole minute. Go home! That's all I have for you. I thank you.